You're listening to Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
With an ear for solutions, Radio EcoShock continues our long-running series on home permaculture and backyard gardening. Next, we visit Calgary, Canada, which just hit national news for their snowfall in May. Luke Kimmel is one of the leaf ninjas, fostering green jobs and local food there. Luke, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you so much, Alex. It's a pleasure.
What are the leaf ninjas? Tell us about your project.
Sure. So the leaf ninjas, we're four entrepreneurs in our mid-20s. We're all born and raised in Calgary, and we're really passionate about giving back to this city through being involved in the local food movement. So specifically, we do edible landscaping, where we consult on and design, install, and maintain edible landscapes, largely focused on food forestry. And then we've operated our urban farm for the last 2 years on borrowed land in some inner city communities where we then grow produce on that land and sell it to farmers markets and restaurants.
So, Luke, a key part of this story for me is the way young people can create their own jobs with alternative urban growing. How did you get started and how did this morph into a successful business?
That's a great question. It's one I do speak more and more on these days as we've actually, 4 years later, found some success in it. But it's a rocky road, and I would say that we took a really grassroots approach. This was not our first business, so this is actually my third or fourth business venture that I've been involved in, and so I did have some kind of entrepreneurial tact. I did prepare a couple of things. The main things that we did were get involved in our community. So as soon as I discovered kind of the value of land and wanting to get reconnected with food and things like that, I got involved with the local community and found some mentors. And I really did everything I could to earn their respect and get around them and spend time with them and glean some knowledge. So that entailed a whole summer of basically volunteering my weekends to attend these garden installations and learn as much as I could on the ground. You know, and then on top of that, just attending courses and workshops, and then I did some volunteer design for some friends, and then that went okay, and then I slowly started charging just small fees for doing design to the point now where we're basically up there with any other landscaping company in the city doing this professionally.
How many people do you employ?
We employ the four partners of Leaf Ninjas, so Leaf Ninjas is four partners, and then we have one full-time employee and a variety of subcontractors that we work with on a kind of project-to-project basis.
Can you make enough money spring to fall to stay alive during the long Canadian winter?
Yes, we figured that out. I think we're just getting there this year. For us, the landscaping and design approach really stood out as being something that wasn't being offered as a service in Calgary and something there was high demand for. So we just really paid attention to the different niches that were available in the market and identified that one and have gone with it. And I think for anybody doing this kind of work, if you can find ways to diversify, like for us, for example, we've begun a propagation program where a lot of the plants that we'd love to grow here, like Good King Henry and Giant Solomon Seal, very difficult to buy or impossible to buy as plant material. We have to grow it out from seed. So that's turned into an income stream for us. Another one is the speaking and teaching. So as soon as you've, you know, found some things out through being on the ground and getting that hands-on experience, then being able to pass that on and share that value with other people through teaching. So diversifying in the income stream is kind of key, just like it is to diversify in the garden.
Those are good tips. So Luke, what is spin farming?
Spin farming, it stands for small plot intensive, and it's basically urban-focused practice for organic growing, where the whole model is based on farms that are an acre or an acre and a half in size max. Our urban farm was never bigger than half an acre. And I think the model really succeeds because it's based on you don't have to own land and you just own your own tools and equipment. And we borrowed land, and this is what spin farmers typically do. They borrow land in the city, whether it's open backyards or big front yards or entire empty lots. And then that land is given in exchange for a share in the produce. And really, we see the homeowners that have lent us land get a lot of value just simply out of helping out with this initiative and feeling like they, even though they're not in the garden growing the produce, they have a huge hand in supporting the urban agriculture movement, and that, you know, allows people to feel like they're doing something, and they really are.
Do spin farmers in Calgary work together, or is it all competitive?
Well, when we got going, there was one other spin farming company that was doing it professionally. So we were the second, and now there's 9 companies that are urban farming this year in Calgary. So we're very blessed in that the scene here, you know, whether it's spin farming or permaculture, it's generally very cooperative. We have a strong market here in Calgary where people are willing to pay for a lot of these services. So there's kind of enough fish in the sea that we can have a collaborative approach. We've actually helped develop and mentor some of these farmers, the new farmers coming up this year and last year. And we've created an organization called the YYC Growers and Distributors. And this is a network of these urban spin farmers combined with some rural farmers. And together we're putting together a CSA, so the Community Supported Agriculture. And we've seen a lot of buy-in from people with that. And that's helped a lot of these new farmers, you know, not have to buy a rototiller, not have to buy the walk-in cooler, and share their resources amongst each other, which has just been fantastic and so rewarding to see.
You know, I saw a photo of Geneva backyards, and there was not a lawn to be seen. It was fence-to-fence gardening and food growing, and apparently they cooperate and tell each other, well, I'll grow this and you grow that. What's your vision for backyard farming in North American cities?
Well, one thing that I really hope for is that this can become, well, and I see it, that it is becoming a respected thing. People think this is cool, it's new, and they get that we need to make some shifts in our overall culture, and they see this as being one positive way that we can do that, that's very accessible. So I see this becoming more normal, and I do see people, you know, of any walk of life, recognizing that quality food comes from locally grown sources, and there's a huge correlation there. So I think that as more people, you know, of all walks of life, the professionals that we do their gardens in downtown, they know that the tomato tastes better from the vine than it does from the store. And the young people who see that, wow, you know, there's some other young folks out there that have, you know, not had to follow the mold and go do the university thing or just work in a full-time career. They've been able to make something for themselves from working with the land, and that's cool. So I do see this becoming more normal and actually something that's sought after.
Luke, you just went through a punishing long winter. I know there are melts occasionally from the famous warm winds in Calgary called the Chinook, but even that break can be a problem for plants that are exposed to the next sub-zero cold snap. And I haven't mentioned the infamous hailstorms that has Calgary gardeners operating a Twitter alert service to cover up. And backyards, you need a pickaxe to dig the soil up the first time. How the heck can you grow food in Calgary?
Well, that's like many things. When we take the permaculture approach, we can turn a problem into a solution. And for us, people believe that you can't grow anything in Calgary. And that gives us shock value when all of a sudden we have a plant list of over, you know, 50 to 100 species that we use and work readily in this climate. I think the key things are basically site selection comes down to be a huge thing, because you're right, it is a very, very harsh climate. And if we just go out into the middle of a prairie and try and start a garden where we're exposed to these harsh winds and we're not getting excess rainfall or irrigation, I mean, it's going to be difficult to grow much of anything in that kind of a site. But when we look at these urban environments, and particularly if we can find south-facing microclimates that are sheltered from sort of the north and west winds, then just through selecting the right site, we can, you know, jump ahead from that zone 2-3 growing condition to maybe even a 4-5. So there's a big sway just based on that. Some of the other things are just what species we're selecting. I mean, we're huge fans here of the sea buckthorn, the sea berry. Grows just about in any soil and very, very hardy. Produces that amazing berry. The green and red aurochs, the mountain spinach, sunchoke. So choosing these really hardy species. And again, diversity. Like if some of our greens or our rhubarb or whatever gets destroyed by the hail, there's a higher chance that if we had trees growing over that and some shrubs, that force is going to be dissipated. And then, of course, things like greenhouses do make a ton of sense in this climate. And we get more and more into that as the years go on.
Yeah, the past winter was brutally cold for most of North America. Luke Kimmel, how can home gardeners protect their perennial plants and trees from the polar vortex?
One thing that we noticed massive success from this year was anywhere that the snow was piling. So even if you're putting up temporary snow fencing or using a crop like sunchoke or even sunflower and leaving those stalks up over the winter and you're getting some kind of snow catchment, we found that snow mulch, even if it was 4 to 6 inches, in areas where that mulch stuck around, our clovers and strawberries, the other ground covers, some of these herbaceous perennials are popping up out of the ground already. Whereas sites where there was no snow cover are bare and very dry and dead-looking. So if you can bury the plants in snow, or even a leaf mulch or any brought-in mulch, I think that's going to, especially in the early season, help you get a head start.
Another great tip. This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. We're talking with Luke Kimmel, part of the local business called the Leaf Ninjas in the western Canadian city of Calgary. Some of the heavy work around there gets done with a perma-blitz. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I'm hugely passionate about the perma-blitz, or sometimes as we call them, garden blitzes. So basically there's three parties that come together to make a perma-blitz happen. You have the homeowner who supplies all the costs, provides food and beverages for the volunteers throughout the day. Then there's a designer who's been hired to create a design, a permaculture design for the site. And they are also, they're going to facilitate the volunteers and educate them, inform them about what to do, how to install that garden properly. And they're responsible for providing leadership and education. And then the volunteers show up, and really they get fed an amazing meal, beverages and snacks throughout the day, and then they get to have some hands-on experience in the garden, and as well as this guided leadership. And we definitely take breaks and do kind of workshop-style education with a whiteboard around specific things in the garden. So it's really a win-win-win all the way around. The homeowner saves a ton of money. It's one of the only very low, you know, low commitment, low risk opportunities for people to actually get hands-on experience in the garden without having their own garden. And it's great for us as well, as facilitators.
A couple of other projects I've heard about in Calgary. One is called The Verge. What is that?
So Verge Permaculture, ran by Rob and Michelle Avis, they've been huge mentors of ours. And, I mean, it comes back to how we got involved in the community. And I chased Rob around Western Canada, followed him to all of his speaking events and all his workshops, and eventually convinced him to let me work for him for a seven-month period. But these guys are amazing, and they're both ex-mechanical engineers who worked in the oil and gas industry in Calgary and have now transitioned into studying permaculture and teaching permaculture. And, I mean, their course and their mentorship, their leadership, like, there's no way we would be here if they hadn't been that pioneer species kind of readying the ground and making way for, really, they've made the way for a handful of probably over a dozen entrepreneurs through their courses and workshops who have been able to now run their own businesses.
What is their names again? I missed that.
It's Rob and Michelle Avis with Verge Permaculture.
You know, I got to be honest, Calgary's known as the oil capital of Canada. It's got lots of offices for tar sands corporations. It's a city of giant pickup trucks. But Calgarians just elected Canada's first Muslim mayor and has a surprisingly vibrant alternative community. How do those two go together?
It's the closet greenies. It's everybody who works and makes their living, you know, doing something for the industry or finance or IT or whatever it is. But then I think at the end of the day, people are still left with this question of, like, how do we fit in this planet? And they recognize that the messaging is just keeps coming up, that there needs to be a shift, there needs to be a shift. And so I see that a lot of these folks still working in these industries want to do something in their spare time, like have a garden. Personally, I'm very passionate about connecting with that exact niche and helping them do that, because I think it's, you know, it's one of those small steps.
An important one. So you get your local city farm produce. How do you get it to consumers, especially if some people are sold on big supermarkets or Walmart? How do you get what you grow out there?
Holy. Well, that's one of the biggest challenges that I think the urban farmers face, is that for people to engage and get this produce, it often requires a bit of a shift from their usual shopping habit. What do I say about that? I mean, the CSA is really a great model for that, because it's a weekly pickup where, well, basically, for anyone that doesn't know, it's a community-supported agriculture where people put up money at the front of at the beginning of the year and buy basically a share in the farm, and then they get a delivery for anywhere from, in Calgary, 17 to 20 weeks usually, max, sometimes 25 for the really good farmers. That's probably one of the best ways. And then the other thing is that we have some community organizations, community associations that have really established and very successful farmers markets, namely Hillhurst Sunnyside has done an amazing job. Their market is very well attended, and we found for us that when we attended that market, sold our produce, that it was one of the most well received, and we did the best financially there.
So for listeners who are warming up to the idea of a permaculture yard, what would it look like?
Well, that's a good question, actually. I mean, I'm answering this question kind of day in, day out. And the first thing that I always stop people on and say is, you know what, we've really got to examine our goals. Because we deal with a wide set of goals. I mean, some people are really concerned about the aesthetics, and that's the primary thing. But they come to us because they want the meaning of having a sustainable food-producing garden. So the plant choices for them is going to be very different than someone who says, I want to be as producing as much of my own food as possible. You know, some people want to relax in their garden. Some people want exercise. Some people want privacy, and other people want to educate and bring in the community. So I'd say, first of all, it really depends. It really depends on the goals. But in general, what our gardens end up looking like is we incorporate rainwater harvesting, so all the water off of the roof or a driveway is diverted into the landscape through a series of either terraces or basins, swales, dry creek beds. And that kind of forms the backbone for the garden, especially with the dry creek bed. It has that beautiful, natural, yet landscaped aesthetic. And then other than that, we're working with basically a forest-like system. It looks like a young savanna, a young woodland ecosystem. So we've got the fruit trees, generally along the north sides kind of the house. They cascade down into hedgerows of shrubs that may be placed for privacy, and then the herbaceous layers of the horseradish, comfrey, hostas, rhubarb. And as much as we can, we actually work with common landscaping plants, such as the ostrich fern and the hosta. People's eyes are already trained to recognize these plants as beautiful landscaping plants, and, you know, little do they know they were also edible. So it can be very beautiful, but it also really does shift based on the individual goals of the homeowner or the client.
Wait a minute, can you eat a hosta?
You can, yeah. You can eat the young shoot of the hosta. So you would eat it in the same way that you would eat asparagus or the Solomon seal, where you pick the young shoot and then you let it grow out and become that beautiful plant later on in the year.
Almost like the ferns we used to pick in Ontario. You had to get them when they first came up and then maybe fry them in butter or something. But if you left them any later than that, they were not so good for you.
Yeah, exactly. So we do work with those ferns as well, the ostrich fern.
When you talk to new customers, why do you think more people are ready to transition from the lawn culture to this home permaculture?
I see that people come to this through many avenues. And, I mean, health and wellness is one, where a lot of the narratives around health and wellness right now point towards quality food. And, you know, people are recognizing that quality food inherently is food locally grown a lot of times, grown organically. So there's the health and wellness aspect. There's the climate change piece where people are concerned and they want to do something. And having a home garden is just one step to help ease the weight that we put onto the industrial food system. And spiritual reasons as well, social reasons where people want to have, you know, a space that they can invite their friends and family into and have a feeling of sanctuary. So for us, we get everywhere from the kind of anarchist approach all the way to the other side of the spectrum, which is, I work full-time and I'm busy, I just want to have a nice garden. But I find it very interesting how we deal with such a wide spectrum of people, and the garden is that common ground that we're finding.
You've created a longing in me. I'll put some links to the ideas and organizations we've talked about in my Radio EcoShock show blog at ecoshock.info. That's published every Wednesday. Luke, please tell our listeners where they can find the Leaf Ninjas online.
All right. We're at www.leafninjas.ca, and we're also very active on our social media on Facebook, facebook.com/CalgaryLeafNinjas, and our Instagram as well, instagram.com/LeafNinjas. Those are probably some of the best places to keep updated with our work.
And now I'm going to show my age. What really is Instagram for?
it's basically one of the fastest working social media, where people are often just taking pictures and posting them from mobile devices. So we'll do that, where we'll post a picture of a piece of work we've just done, or some food we've just harvested, or something like that. And there's a lot of really great gardeners and permaculturists that are using that tool, and it just does help to make it a little bit cooler to do this kind of stuff and to show that value in a really easy way.
Well, I could see it could be handy. I mean, you've got a leaf of a plant. You're wondering, what's this? Or maybe even an insect. Has anybody seen this? You could just share it that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've been talking about local food ideas that work with Luke Kimmel of the Leaf Ninjas in Calgary, Canada. Thank you so much, Luke.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure, Alex. Thank you for all your work.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.